see you were born in Sweden, so you could tell me where you were born and when you came to Canada and where you were educated.
Oh, well, I was born in Sweden, yes, and then I was taken to England to join my father. I should explain, my mother was Swedish but brought up from her teens on in New York's USA, and then met my father, who was then in the Merchant Navy as an engineer, and they met in New York. So therefore, we married and went to Sweden. But my father, being an Englishman, couldn't stand that. So he went back to England, and then my mother followed. So I was approximately 2 years old, and I went to England, to the county of Norfolk, where I went to school and contracted polio in 1927. So then, from that time on, my education was largely in hospitals for 2 years, I think, from the age of six on. And so was in different parts of England as well. And then later in my teens, finished school and then went into nurse's training. I was very fortunate in that I was accepted. I wanted home economics, but I was told that it would be much too strenuous for me and I wouldn't be able to stand on my feet so long. Well, I don't know why on earth they thought that nursing was any easier, because that was from 7 till 9, that from 1938 on. So I went into orthopedic nursing in Shropshire at a very well-known hospital, and then the leg really didn't survive that, so I had to take off, and then I went into children's nursing for a while, and then later walked, it was difficult. Well, it had been on for some time at that time, and they became short of nurses and so on. Even if I was not medically fit, they threatened that I should go into the army, and I really was not very keen on that. So I decided I'd better go back into nursing, but instead I went back to hospital administration in a large children's hospital in Hampshire, and that's when I met my husband. So after that, my husband came back in the January of 1946, and I followed as a war bride in 1946 in August, to Edmonton, where we lived for 2 years, and my husband received an IODE scholarship, and we went to Cambridge for 3 years. In that time, we had a daughter in 1948, Beatrix, and she was, 10 months old when I took her to England. And we lived there, and she went off to a little school there when she was quite young. And in 1951, my husband was offered a posting to UBC as assistant professor in the Department of French, Department of French. And we lived in Westbrook camp. And, I don't know, we seem to become involved in all kinds of things then. I can remember the Brock fire and felt very helpless and not knowing what to do and thinking that the students wouldn't have any place to meet, because that was the great meeting place in 1951 on. I joined the Faculty Women's Club at that time.
Now, how did you come to join the Faculty Women's Club? Were you approached? Or?
Yes, we were approached. All the newcomers were usually taken by the head of the department's wife, and I I don't remember if I was or not. She was very active in it. I don't think she was at that time, Mrs. Anderson. But however, I went, and I was befriended by Mrs. King, whose husband was Professor of Agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
And we had... I can't remember my first meeting, but I would imagine it was the first of the year, because in the September, Mrs. Mackenzie opened the house. But then the house was not built, so it must have been in the old faculty club.
Right, right.
I can't remember the first meeting. After that, I became a regular meeting, and I think they were usually held in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm. This is the second Tuesday every month.
I think that's true.
Something
and it
like
has
that.
Not, it has not altered, and I think at that time. And I gathered friends too, and of course the camp was a great meeting ground of all the faculty, young faculty members.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, to my horror, counting the children around once, I think it was something like 83.
Oh my goodness.
In the vicinity, and of course my child was involved in that, as well as the kindergarten over in Acadia. So we were all quite busy, but I used to get quite worried about the children not having enough to do, and I can remember once I gave them all milk bottles and sent them out to pick the dandelion heads.
This is while you were having your meeting?
No, this was not after the meeting. I'm afraid I've got that muddled, but I went back from meetings back to the camp where we met younger
okay.
members of faculty, and of course we all had children, so we had something in common there. And I sent them all out picking petals from the dandelions, because they would make dandelion wine. Well, it was very difficult to get the petals out of the milk bottles because it was slightly damp and so on. But however, the children seem to be quite interested. I wonder how many of them grown up today remember this. The dandelion wine was not successful at all. It was terribly sweet, and it really did not do what it should have done anyway. So that was a dead loss, but it kept the children quite occupied for some time.
Was there any thought at the time to trying to set up a daycare or some sort of sitting service for the faculty and women's club members?
There were talk, but we did have a kindergarten that they met a couple of hours in morning or afternoon in Acadia.
Mm-hmm.
And then Mrs. Borden had a preschool too, I believe. But as a daycare such, no, we all looked after our own at that time, I think. The children were really quite well catered as to playing outside the point. There was a ditch which we were always scared stiff that someone would fall into, but I don't think we lost any.
Yeah. I hope not.
They were all accounted for. And that was the time when we arrived at the fraternity houses were being built.
Mm-hmm.
That was all woods
across
from where we were. And I think it was the second fraternity house on the row that was being built at the time.
So that would be in the early 1950s.
Yes, it would be in about 1952.
Yeah.
And so you could then see that place was being cleared. It was rather an exciting time, really, because from that time on, buildings were going up all the time. In fact, even in Westbrook Camp, Dr. Strum had a knack of purchasing another hut from somewhere or other to be put in Westbrook. And you could go to bed at 10 o'clock one night and wake up at 7 the next morning, and you'd find you have another hut down the road.
Now, where
it just come.
Where was that located exactly?
Westbrook on Westbrook Crescent.
Oh.
A continuation of Westbrook Crescent. It's not there. Now, the medical building is there at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, we just happened to be passed that way when they were knocking our hut down to start the building, which was I suppose it's about 10, 12, 14 years ago now. Mm-hmm. I can't remember what day. We were in Kelowna at the time we were down. So it was really quite a remember. I wanted to pick up a brick because the bricks were the foundation of the hut. But I was not allowed to stop and take one home.
What was it like inside? I've only seen actually
inside,
the outside
well,
of
it. Well, actually, they were very good. They really were. And everyone had a different motif. I know because I came back from England. And after the war, everything was very dull, of course, and colour was the thing. Mm-hmm. And in 1951, 52, the colours then were tomato red, lime green, and blonde furniture. And of course, I had it. I can't imagine to this day what induced me to take it. But anyway, they were very attractive, really, in most of the places that you went into. There were two bedrooms. They were not really soundproof because there were two together, you know, side by side. Mm-hmm. So the bedroom walls, heads to head would be. So we've heard very many intimate conversations from our neighbours at times, and I'm sure they've heard the same to us. But one had to be quite, you could quite easily babysit your neighbours' children.
Yeah.
You know, too. But two bedrooms and a living room and the kitchen, which acted as a kind of dining room too.
Mm-hmm.
They were adequate. And I think when we went there, the rent was $40 a month. But then, of course, the salary at that time was probably about $3,000 a year. My husband's getting, so everything is in the way it goes. But at that time, and then, of course, in about 1953, Dr. Srum, who was then the head of everything, including housing, decided that we should pay more rent, and it would go up, I believe, $3 a month. Had the gymnasium, I think, at that time, and all the men from the camps went off to contest this and said it was dreadful. But when you look back on today, we were very fortunate and very lucky to have such accommodation at that time.
It's incredible.
It is incredible, and it's incredible too when you think that I think it was around $3,000 a year or so that we could save. And most within 5 years, I think, perhaps had a down payment on the house.
Mm-hmm. A little
we
different.
Moved out in, I think it was 54 or 55 years. Mm-hmm. But in that time, I think many friendships were developed through the housing.
Mm-hmm.
And then through the interest groups of the club. They've always been quite a strong point in the Faculty Women's Club.
Well, I gathered that. They were started around 1945.
Yes, and they've been going.
As the membership grew, then it was kind of a focal point, wasn't
it? Was.
In the club.
It was. And I joined the book review group, the play reading, the handicraft group, and the pottery group. There was a pottery group to begin with, which met over in Acadia, very well established. I have only one piece of pottery that I made, and it's the ugliest piece of thing you've ever seen, but the instructor thought it was wonderful. I think it was just before all this modernistic stuff that came out, and if he knew why I put these dreadful daubs of stuff on it, he would not know it was my artistic ability. But there were a number that did the pottery, and there's some that's still going on with that.
Who would have taught the pottery?
A man by the name of Rex Mason, who came from San Francisco, and he taught. It was a night course.
So he was a professional potter?
Oh, yes. He was a very well-known one, I believe, in San Francisco.
Mm.
He was here for a time.
How lucky.
We were extremely lucky on that. I can't remember who else attended that. In Acadia at the time, but there was a small group of us.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the book review group, which was really quite active.
Is that not that still going
it's
on?
It's still
too?
Going on, I think, in a different mode. We had to read the book and then describe it. In fact, one that I can remember was the birds, and I think everyone else can remember this. It was quite scary. Another member spoke of Dylan Thomas, and we had recordings and readings of his all night. And I must say that it did go on for a long time, and to this day I have not liked Dylan Thomas because it was... I know it's a terrible thing to say, but that was one thing. Yeah. That, so really it was a learning experience as well as a most enjoyable evening.
Well,
to
that's
be
what
out
fun
at
about,
the at the interest groups.
Yeah.
The handicraft group I first entered, Mrs. McPhee, Jean McPhee, whose husband was the senior bursar, I suppose you would say, and also the head of the commerce department.
Mm-hmm.
We made gloves together, suede gloves.
Mm-hmm.
And another group in that did beaten copper work. So between the needles and the beating of copper, it was quite a noisy evening. But there again, that group, we forged friendships
mm-hmm.
that have been lasting. The glove making was really quite something, because I still have a pair after, 30 years. You know, they last, and it was quite something. I haven't made any sense, but the copper work done by the others were very professional.
Mm. Well, so this is basically to encourage sociability amongst the members.
It really is, yes. And, of course, there's always the coffee and the tea and the goodies.
That's a big feature.
I think it is, all through that. But I suppose it's the same in men's group as women's group. It's a sociable thing.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever sell any of your works in the interest groups to raise money for the charities or the scholarships or whatever you were supporting?
Not in those days we didn't. Mm-hmm. It's only since I've been back that they've had the Christmas bazaar
mm-hmm.
where we produce something to make... for the scholarships. And yes, I have.
Mm-hmm.
And since I was accepted back here in 1980, I've thoroughly enjoyed the Christmas bazaar. And I think that there again, it's a feeling of helping some student with a bursary. And I like to have some kind of project that serves some value.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's every reflected in everybody's attitude, that instead of just doing something for your own interest and enjoyment, produce something.
I think it probably is at that time.
Yeah.
But the interest groups I feel have been perhaps a holding point for the Faculty Women's Club, mm-hmm. one of them anyway. I remember too that the Faculty Club was sort of asked to look into student housing, because even in those days there was talk of racial discrimination in students, and it's a very touchy subject, and certainly in those days too. And I think there was great discussion at one time in the executive of whether that perhaps they should go and interview landladies on students coming to the university from mm-hmm. other countries, but it was not carried out.
I saw that was in the minutes, mm-hmm. whereas originally that was the purpose of starting the Faculty Women's Club, was to supervise housing for women.
That's quite
by the
correct.
Time the 60s came, it was felt inappropriate to go and follow up on that.
I don't know how much was done in earlier times on that, but then we must remember there were not as many foreign students or students from across Canada coming to UBC in those days.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it would be a much easier task perhaps in those days, but later on I think it was a little more difficult.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, that did not come to fruition.
Mm-hmm. Well, I did see from the minutes that you were group members, or the Faculty Women's Club had a group membership with the UN Association the Community Arts Council,
yes,
and friendly relations to overseas students. And I wondered, what being a member, group member, what did you do with those organizations? Can you remember?
I don't remember anything about the group membership. No. Now, the overseas students, yes. I think at least once a year we used to put on a dinner for overseas students. I can remember one at the, it was the time I was on the executive, but I can't remember of what year it was, that we had a potluck supper. And I can't even remember which building we held it in, but I know that we all took our pots wrapped up in cloths and to this, and I know at the time there were some radical people on students. You must remember too, this was the time of the McCarthy era too in in the United States, so of course everyone was a little careful and so on to do this. But anyway, the students had organized it, and we were providing the food and the hospitality, and each member of the faculty, women, sat at a table with a group of students. And the students had organized their social activity after, of which they had a speaker. And he was under, well, I don't know exactly what you would say, but he was a bit radical, I suppose, for the times, and he'd just come back from India. And it was a very pleasant evening, but a student at one of my tables got up and said he would not listen any longer to this and left, and I began to wonder what was happening. My husband was there too. And so, however, the evening passed, and it was all very nice, and we met students from all over. And the next day, the RCMP officer from university detachment came into my husband, who was then in the president's office, and asked if he knew a certain Maybrit Jeffels and what her activities were like. Apparently, he thought perhaps I was communist, because they had thought, as I, well, I must have been the social convener, that was right at the time, and that I had asked this gentleman to speak, and also it was also time of the Cuba time,
yeah.
And I think it was the union man too was speaking on his visit to Cuba,
yeah.
So this was, looking back, it's quite amusing, but at the time I was really quite worried. So
who was the speaker?
I can't remember his name, and I wouldn't like to say anyway now, but I'm quite certain he's doing very good works. But it was rather funny to be sort of asked. And of course, my husband was a bit surprised, and he said, well, it is my wife. And he said, oh, yeah. So he assured the officer that really I had no no part of the
right
planning of the speakers for that night. So I can remember that. And that was before all the, what you call the student revolution,
yeah,
took place. But I suppose, looking back on it, it was a certain build-up, mm-hmm, to it.
Yeah, I imagine.
That time,
yeah. Yes. Well, talking about speakers, when you were active as president,
yeah,
do you remember the type of speakers you had or what the topics were for the Faculty Women's Club?
Well, the time I had was president, it was places to meet. So, as I explained, we met once in the art gallery, which was quite new, but meeting off campus.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an experience too, yeah, because we had not been out, I don't think, at that time. I think that I'm quite right in saying. And another time we met up in the new student, graduate student building, which had just been built. And Mr. Leon Kerner then lived on the top floor.
Mm-hmm.
He was away at the time. And we got the executive and myself got permission from Mr. Kerner to hold our meeting up there. and we invited the architect, and I cannot remember his name, I know it begins with a K, and Mrs. Phyllis Ross, who was Chancellor, I believe, at the time, was there, and the executive and the members all met up there, and we had, I suppose, tea somewhere again. We always had tea. But it was very interesting because Mr. Kern had many treasures in his home too. Mm-hmm. And it was explained how the building took shape and so on. So that was another meeting. So that, you could say, was perhaps a lecture partly on architecture,
right,
at that time. The art gallery, of course, at that... I can't remember what exhibition was on at that time.
That was when you met Doris Shadbolt?
Yes. Mrs. Yeah. Shadbolt was then, I think, the curator of that part, mm-hmm, of the library. I'm trying to remember where else. We always had an annual dinner in the April,
mm-hmm,
and I cannot remember where that took place at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Where else did we meet? Can't remember.
Did you go to the Mackenzie's house also?
Yes. After the house was built and the Mackenzie's came, mm-hmm, Mrs. Mackenzie graciously allowed us to come for our newcomers' reception in the September.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a great thing to do because we would decorate the house with flowers.
Mm-hmm.
And one of our members, Gloria Howard's husband, was a chrysanthemum grower.
Oh.
So we had the most gorgeous chrysanthemums. And he would allow us to have pots and things, and we would decorate and so on, and Gloria would be very kind and help us too. But I remember one year we had decorated very much. And somehow I believe other times that the flowers, some of them had gone back to the greenhouse. But Mrs. Mackenzie one year decided that she was having a dinner reception the next night. It would be nice to keep the flowers. Well, I don't think it was quite the thing to do, but Gloria gave in and very kindly said yes, she could keep them. But they were gorgeous flowers at that time.
Well, I gather that Mrs. Mackenzie must have been very hospitable because the Faculty, yes, Women's Club wanted to have a portrait done,
yes,
of her.
Yes, that was in the year I was president, and they were, yeah, retiring, and we decided that, executive, and we decided that something should be done. And we were not quite certain what we could do, but it was at the time that a residence was being named in her name at that time, the Margaret Mackenzie Residence for Women,
yeah,
on campus.
Yeah.
And so therefore, we decided that perhaps a portrait to hang in the entrance,
mm-hmm,
to the residence. So the executive and myself decided, well, we'd better find out something about it. So in those days, I really didn't know much about art. I still don't know enough, but at least in those days, perhaps I was a little naive, but I thought, really, we need help. We'd better do something about it. So we went to the Fine Arts Department, where Professor McNairn, I think it was, Ian McNairn, and we asked him if he could help us in a portrait painting. And of course he said, how much money have you got? And I think we said about $200. Well, even in that time, it's terribly little. But I thought, well, perhaps the president's office might help. And I think that's where some of the money came, yeah, from. And I cannot remember the exact amount that the portrait, mm-hmm, cost. But I'm sure we had no more than $400, mm-hmm, at that time. So Professor McNairn said, yes, he would help us. And in a few days, he called to say, a gentleman, I think from West Vancouver, and I cannot remember his name, an industrial artist would consent to paint Mrs. Mm-hmm. Mackenzie. Well, in those days, I thought, an industrial artist, you know, that was the time when factory sites and, you know, buildings were going up. And I thought, I wonder how Mrs. Mackenzie's going to feel about this, you see. So I sort of tentatively asked Professor McNairn about this. I said, well, you know, an industrial man really would like to be a full-time portraiture artist. So really, it's quite all right, Mrs. Jeffels. So I said, thank you very much. So,
may I steal some coffee? I won't take the biscuits.
So fortunately, Mrs. Mackenzie liked Bruce Stapleton, and the portrait was painted, and I think it turned out very well.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, in July, we had the unveiling. Well, I didn't realize that portraits are unveiled. We organized a small tea party. Mrs. Mackenzie just wanted the executive and one or two other friends, and that was all. So on the day, I had something else to do in the morning, and the vice president was then Betty Belshaw.
Mm-hmm.
She decided we should have curtains over the portrait and have it properly veiled. So off to Woodward she went to borrow curtains for this.
To borrow?
Yes, she told them what it was for, and they very kindly lent her some dreadful-looking rose-covered curtains, which Betty, bless her, erected over the portrait. And what's more, they pulled aside when the unveiling took place. And it was a very pleasant afternoon. And to this day, I don't know where the portrait is.
Oh, I thought it was hanging up in, is it Place Vanier residence?
Is it still there?
I don't know.
I don't know, because I've asked and I haven't been, haven't been told.
Mm-hmm.
But that was one of the...
Well, Mrs. Mackenzie, was she? Did she have a lot to do with the Faculty Women's Club?
No, not really. She would come when I was asked, and of course she was our honorary president at the time,
mm-hmm.
but not a great deal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. Just to go back to some of the speakers who were at the meetings, now I saw that there was a speech or a debate about women. Are women educating themselves for extinction? And I haven't found very much about that debate. Is there anything that you can remember about the debate or what was resolved?
I can't remember very much about it. If it's the one that you're asking me about, I know there was a very awkward question I've asked of Dr. Srum at the time, and it shocked us all. But I can't remember that there was any outcome to that debate at all. I think it's still going on.
Were the men taking one side and the women the other? Or
not that I remember.
No,
I don't think so. I don't think perhaps the women's consciousness had been risen to such as they are today.
Mm-hmm.
I think perhaps we're much more docile. I think we're perhaps now a little more ambitious, and I wouldn't say know our places better. That's not what I mean at all. But I do think that perhaps some might feel that perhaps... I really don't know. I can't answer that mm-hmm. question at the moment. But as for the debate, I can remember it and being, and I'm sure it was again in Brock Hall. But I can't remember
mm-hmm.
too much about it at all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There was not something, if there was some startling outcome, I'm sure I would have remembered it.
Yeah.
I think the debate is still going on.
Yeah.
On that topic.
Yeah, exactly. what about any of the other speakers? Are there any other particular meetings or issues or things that went on that... you remember being particular interest?
Well, I do remember, I think it was on the occasion of one of the birthdays of the UBC. It was late 50s when there was a symposium being held, and attending that was Mr. Pearson, Mr. Diefenbaker, who was then, I believe, the Premier, the Prime Minister of Canada, Mr. W.A.C. Bennett, our Premier, Mr. Caldwell, who was the NDP leader at the time, I believe that's correct. Who have I left out? No, I think that. They were there, and a great dinner was held, again in Brock Hall. And it was really quite an affair. And, of course, Dr. Mackenzie knew all these people personally, too. So it was a friendly gathering. And then the speeches started after an excellent dinner. And the speeches went on and on and on. And I think it was approximately 1:30 when Dr. Mackenzie announced that Ruth Blair, who was then the dietitian, would provide breakfast for us if we were still there. Ruth Blair looked astounded and hoped that it wouldn't happen. And it didn't. But it was a very long dinner with no intermission, so you can remember, you can imagine what it was rather like. That was one of the times too. And to this day, I cannot remember any part of any speech that one of those politicians made that was outstanding that I should remember to this day, I mean. And that's sad, I think. Perhaps I should get the text of the speeches from the library and read them to see and refresh
see
my
memory. See if there was any meat
if there
them.
Was anything there that perhaps for the future, or I think probably it was from the past that they were speaking mostly.
Yeah.
Probably.
Dean McRae, she
yes.
was still Dean of Women, wasn't she?
Yes, she
at
was.
That time. And how? What was her relationship with?
Well, she was a very stalwart friend to the Faculty Women's Club,
mm-hmm.
because she kept us informed, I think, really on women's plights and so on at the university, and that's the time we began to get. Well, I suppose it had been going on, but I think more aware of the women on campus.
Mm-hmm.
There were quite a number who've come, and I'm sure still are, on a very limited income. And we started giving a certain amount per year.
Mm-hmm.
And also she would...
As loans or bursaries? Or
yes,
grants?
I think as loans and... outright gifts, I believe, really,
mm-hmm.
of money. We gave a certain amount, not nearly enough to cover anything. But I do remember one student in particular that she told us about, and she had very little clothes. And I know that I took it to another group that I belonged to, and I think the girl was outfitted completely in that due to someone else's
mm-hmm.
kindness. But I think this went on too. I think perhaps in the Faculty Women there might have been individual women who did things on their own without coming before the group or the executive. I'm quite certain this has happened all along.
Right. It's probably sort of a stimulus to people
yes.
who are members.
It is, and I think
yeah.
when they hear about the things and if they feel they can do something, I think this is what's happened
mm-hmm.
quite often.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't go down, perhaps, in the records
right.
of the
right.
of the Faculty Women's
Club. Right. Well, the membership, when you were president, was up in the 200s, so...
Yes, it was at that time. It was quite good. I think the first thing I did was raise the fees.
Yes, you did, from $3 to $5.
A large lump, and the last meeting I was at in 1987... No, it was this April, 88, and the fees now are $20, and I was one of them that agreed they should be raised from the 15
mm-hmm.
to the 20. So you can see it's taken a long leap. But I think the greatest thing, we always come back to the cups of teas and cookies at I can remember it was 25 cents when I started in that. And then it took a giant leap, I think, to 50 cents, and then 75 cents, I think, it's almost a rebellion. Now we pay $6 and something for our lunch at one, I think, $6.35, and I don't think anyone blinks an eye.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all to do with the cost of living, I mm-hmm. think, but it's amazing.
The $3 to $5 membership jump, did that cause a lot of commotion at the time?
I can't remember very much, but they probably looked at me and thought, yes, she would do it, so
I don't know. You bulldozed it through?
No, it wasn't bulldozed through, but I think that perhaps it was very carefully explained by the treasurer at the time of why we needed it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the treasurer at that time, if I can remember rightly who it was, is a very docile, dedicated woman. And I'm sure she explained it very carefully to every penny and to every stamp that was used. And so therefore, I don't think anything happened.
Yeah.
But really, it was quite amazing that we had really quite a... I think we were given quite a bit from the Faculty Women's Club, if you count all the things that you don't think about in the club.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's
that covered our membership. You have to pay your dues to be a member of the interest groups, which is a very good idea.
Yeah. And that provides a focal point for
it does.
The faculty wives, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And membership originally was just the wives of faculty women. Now
that caused a great deal of concern, I think, because in lots of cases there were other women that were working in research labs, and secretaries, and so on, who were graduates of universities and so on, but because they were not wife of a faculty member or teaching in a faculty, not allowed. And I think this caused quite an upset at one time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there was a very senior person retiring from the president's office at the time. I've forgotten what position on executive I had, but I had thought at the time that she should be made an honorary member or anything. And it went through the executive, but it had to go to the dinner meeting, the annual meeting, of course. And I was to propose it, I think, or second it, I can't remember which, but unfortunately I had a fall and I couldn't go to the dinner that night. And it was rather embarrassing for the lady there at the time, because no one knew of the in the general audience as it was going to be done. But however, someone rescued it and it went through. But I always felt that was a little embarrassing.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm very glad to see now that anyone that's interested in the Faculty Women's Club and will pay their dues is welcome.
Mm-hmm.
And I think... I think this is it should be. The more interest you have, the healthier the club will be.
Yeah.
Much, I think this is a very good idea.
Yeah.
Because whatever, if someone is that interested, they will give. They're not going to take.
Well, also, I saw the membership had grown so much that you established a newsletter then.
This was done, I believe, in Pat Chapman's presidency, if I remember rightly. Now, she came in the 60s, I think.
Yeah, September 62 was the first news.
Oh, was it? Well,
yeah.
I was just about to depart, I think, at that time.
Were you involved?
No, I was not, because we left in 63.
Mm-hmm.
For the University of Victoria. But that happened soon after. And yes, I think it's a very good idea. And I thoroughly enjoy getting it to read all the news and so on. But it's getting to be a very costly proposition now, you know. It's really very costly to put out.
Yeah.
So I don't know what will happen in the future. When it started, I'm quite certain that they got a lot of free paper, free Xeroxing, and perhaps even stamps. I don't know how it was done, but I'm quite certain if the faculty club, the faculty women's club, produced something, it would be done in the most economical terms.
That's right.
It always was, and I'm quite certain to this day it's still. The executive thinks of every cent.
Well, certainly in the minutes they were talking about dinners that were held downtown during the Depression, and it was either going to be at, I guess it was Hotel Vancouver or the Hudson's Bay Company, and one was $1 for the dinner, which and the other was 80 cents, and the dinner consisted of soup, crab cocktail, salad, dessert. I think it was ice cream with fruit on it. It was all for $1. The other one was 80 cents, so 80 cents was chosen.
Chosen, exactly. I remember, too, I think I was the social convener, too, at that time. I think I was. And we went over to the Capilano Gardens, I think it is. It's near the suspension bridge, mm-hmm. I think. And we went there for a dinner dance one April, and that was quite different too from anything we'd done before. And everyone said, oh, it's so far, we'll never get there, we'll lose and the rest of it. Now, I can't remember what the price was, but they put something on extremely reasonable. It was a very pleasant evening as far as I remember, but that was off campus again.
Yeah. So we did go doing things off campus more.
I don't know if I started it, but it was a case of necessity, I think, partly too, in the 61-62.
Because there were more demand on the buildings on campus?
Well, I think so. I think this was the thing too. Yes, I think it was. And I think probably it might come up again in the time too. But I don't think it hurts sometimes to take a year out and go and visit some of the other places to see them and what. Although I don't think perhaps in those days living in Westbrook and so on, we were probably away from the city more than they are today, so they do see other things, but it's a good idea, I think, to see or go and look at something as a group.
Before you were president, what positions did you hold before you became president?
Well, I have an idea that I started off as a social convener.
And what did that entail?
Arranging everything for the meetings and tea and coffee and cookies again. We always come back to that. I didn't do the program. Yes, I probably did program too once. I can't remember what else. Then vice president, of course, and then president and past president. That's that. But I was not a treasurer or a secretary. Mm-hmm. I'd done that in previous things, and that's not one of my fortes, I'm afraid.
Yeah, it's not a favorite position either.
I've always been very fortunate having a very good secretary, and Iris Farley was my secretary and in that executive, and she was excellent. Kept everything on track. In fact, the whole executive, I couldn't have asked for any better bunch of people. They protected me.
They protected you. Mrs. Peebles?
Mrs. Peebles was the past president, and she was an absolute dear to me and helped me a great deal. And Betty Belshaw, the vice president, was very good indeed too, and so I think we got along all very well, and I think everything went along all right that year. It was a busy year because of the Mackenzie's retirement, so we had a lot of extra, I think, to do.
Were your meetings formal? I mean, I know you had minutes, but did you sit around at a table and...
For executive, we met in each other's homes, I believe, at that time. And yes, quite. It was good grounding for anyone who was to go on into other groups. Robertson rules and regulations were adhered to, and also our constitution. And that was another thing, I think, in the year that I came in, we revised the constitution again. And we seem to do that every, well, it's, I think it says on the back page every 5 years, and I think it's a very good idea because things change over the period of time. And I think that was the year, the first thing we did was had to review the constitution. And I know I asked Di Priestley, who was in the law faculty, to be one member of it. I thought it'd be a very good idea to have a woman lawyer on the committee. And this was done, and I think, I can't remember who else was on it. But that held me in good stead, because from that time on, I think I've been on three other groups that I belong to that have formed a society or a club that had to have a constitution, and I've been on the three of them from the very beginning. And that held me in good stead because I learned a great deal on that. So if anyone really wants to learn the workings of things, Robert's Rules and Regulations and Form a Constitution. And then send your $10 to the university, to the government. have it done properly.
And the general meeting, that was usually also quite formal.
Quite formal, really, yes. The speaker was introduced and thanked, as it should be done. And it seems to me that we never paid a speaker. We always found someone who would come and speak on some subject to us. Nowadays, I gather that speakers are not quite so kind to groups. But we still have them at the faculty club, but I think they are given a gift. I'm not sure because I haven't asked. But and I've thoroughly enjoyed some of the speakers that have been produced lately. Because some of the interest groups, well, there is an interest group that deals with, not United Nations exactly, but affairs of the world, which I haven't gone to, but some of them are really excellent. They take place, I think, usually in the evenings. But so there again, the interest group really provides something for everyone of interest in that. It can be from the handicraft to the music to the politics. In every way. So I think, yes, that's a good idea.
So do you feel the fact the Women's Club has changed since you were first a member? So over a period of, what, 20, 30 years?
It's hard to say. No, not really. Because I was away from 63 to 1980. Well, in between, I perhaps have been attending one or two special meetings, but that was all. But I came back and picked up, really, from where I left off, almost. Except that I don't serve in any way, but I do help in my small way in Christmas Bazaar and so on. But and I belong to the interest groups, pay my fee, and belong to the interest group. So, yes, really, not a great deal, I don't think. I would like to see more younger members, more younger women join, but this has always been a problem, and there's always been excuses. The excuse now is that the most of them work or have other things to do, but I don't know. But I think this is, I think all women's groups are this way at the moment. I've noticed in other groups that I belong to, you know, our groups are getting older, and I take great joy when I see a younger member taking a position on the executive, because that means that things are going to continue. But it's just not with the Faculty Women's Club, it's most clubs, I think.
What other groups are you a member of now?
Or? In the Faculty Women's Club?
No, I mean other associations.
No, I'm not at the present moment. I'm the last I had was on the Richmond Community Arts board. I had 3 years on that. Mm-hmm. And before that I was on the board of the symphony and also was one of the founding members of the Symphony Women's Committee in Kelowna.
Mm.
And on the hospital auxiliary and so on. But mm-hmm. no, I'm not doing anything at the moment. I'm just resting in between.
That's right.
I enjoy the groups that I belong to, such as the handicraft group, the bridge group, and nothing for the mind, all with, not really, no.
Now, you were on the Imperial Order, the Daughters of the Empire.
Yes.
And in what capacity were you, what were you doing with that organization?
Well, my husband was a national scholarship winner mm-hmm. from Alberta in 1948 and had 3 years that at Cambridge in England. And when they supplied him with a sum of money each year, which was simply marvellous. So when I came back, I thought, well, I should join these women sometime. But I thought you had to be asked, so I waited around, and then I was attending a coffee party for another organization and met a woman who said she was with the, I think it was the RCAF chapter here in Vancouver, and I said, oh, well, my husband, that. Well, no sooner than I said that, I found myself signed up as a member. So then I served, I can't remember what, with what I was on the executive in some way, but I can't remember what. And then after that, I went to Victoria, where I was with the Robert Burns McMicking chapter for a number of mm-hmm. years. And then I decided it was time that Saanich had a chapter, so I and a group of others formed a chapter called the Martlet Chapter. And so I was the founding regent of that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the martlet is a bird without feet, and it's on the crest of McGill's
mm-hmm.
University mm-hmm. and also the University of Victoria. Mm-hmm. So we had an affiliation with the University of Victoria, very loosely really. We've produced four bursaries, if I can remember them. I think one is in law, one for a mature woman student, arts and English mm-hmm. bursary. And I think the bursary is up to about $400 each a year.
Mm-hmm.
And we're mm-hmm. each year a certain amount of money is put into the capital.
Mm-hmm.
And whilst it was in its young stage, we as a group of women became the, not docents exactly, but for the Maltwood Museum, mm-hmm. which was a replica of the 14th, 15th century house and a collection of things that had been collected by the Maltwoods over the years, some very good pieces, antiques and sculpture. Mm-hmm. She, Mrs. Maltwood was a sculptor too. And this house was a museum that was left to the University of Victoria. And so we became the guides for this. Mm-hmm. So two ladies every day, five, six days a week would do mm-hmm. this. And we did it for 3 years. And I was the, I suppose the senior one of that for mm-hmm. a time. Mm-hmm. And to this day, we're still very interested in the University of Victoria. In fact, mm-hmm. we've just celebrated our 21st anniversary. And I was there for their luncheon 2 months ago. And we started with 16 members. It's the only group that I know that have grown to 40. Nine members. They had 50 for a period of 15 minutes. They entered a new one, and then someone decided they'd resign. So that, but however, so that has grown, but they're all senior people, you know. Mm. They're not there are a few young, but anyway, they are still carrying on and raising money and producing bursaries and help for other organizations. But so I've had good relations with those too.